Ask Mr. Tony Gleason to give our invocation.
All right, thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to come to this morning to consider our financial plan for new fiscal year. I pray for wisdom in our decision-making, that WKU may continue to be a leader in our state, in our nation, and around the globe. I pray for our administrative leaders, our board, our president, as they lead in these challenging times. Father, we just thank you for life and the opportunity to go about doing good in our world. These things we ask with humble hearts and confidence. Amen.
Are you ready?
Yes, sir.
Same protocol, Mr. President. Now proceed to roll call, Mr. Porter.
Dr. Dennison. Mr. Dodds.
Here.
Ms. Harris.
Here.
Mr. Higdon.
Here.
Mr. Johnson.
Here.
Mr. Kennedy.
Here.
Mr. Meyer.
Here.
Dr. Minter.
Here.
Mr. Wilkie and Mr. Zilke. Roll call.
Declare that we have a quorum. Next item is approval of minutes. You have received minutes for the first quarterly meeting, January 20th, 2012. Are there any additions or corrections? Regent Minter.
Yes. On the minutes from January 20th, 2012, on page 9, we have a misspelling that would upset people if it showed up on search engines. We've misspelled Ronald Reagan.
Oh.
On page 9.
So his wife.
We will get that corrected.
Okay, thank you.
Patty, look over on page 13 on your discussion.
Yes.
The second paragraph of your discussion, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, line down.
3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Yes.
Is that contract? Is that correct, or is that should be contrast?
Actually, it was contract because it was referring to Mr. Taggart's contract singular.
Okay.
At the time, but thank you.
That one's okay.
All right.
Thank you.
Any other addition, comments, corrections? Not entertain a motion for approval of the January 20th minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Regent Minter, seconded by Regent Meyer. Any further discussion? Call the question. All in favor of approval, aye.
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 Opposed, no. February 20th minutes are approved. Next, moving to the quarterly meeting minutes of April 27th, 2012. Any additions or corrections? Not hearing any. Entertain a motion for approval.
Move to approve.
Motion by Regent Kennedy.
Second.
Seconded by Regent Dodds. Any further discussion? All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Minutes are approved. Next, turn to the Finance and Budget Committee. Chairman Porter.
I'll direct your attention to page one of the booklet, action item 1.1, and the request is to approve the 2012-13 budget, including tuition and fee schedules. And Ann Mead is here to make a brief review of the high points that we discussed in, at length at the committee meetings.
Thank you. We did have a lengthy discussion. Ms. Harris, I'm sorry you weren't available and couldn't attend. I'd be happy to meet with you personally, and obviously at the end of my very short previous presentation, if you have any questions, I'll try to address those. First slide is just a summary of the total budget. We're asking you to approve a budget $388,597,000. This slide again tells you the difference between educational and general, where we have unrestricted funds, where we have more discretion, versus restricted funds, primarily financial aid, grants and contracts, and auxiliary enterprises, which include housing and bookstore. So we are having a minimal increase for a budget next year. That's, it goes almost to 1%. An important component of the budget, and also what we're asking you to approve, is on page 7 of your agenda materials, which is specifically the tuition and mandatory student fees schedule. This is in your budget book, but actually the board takes specific action when they approve the budget to also approve the tuition fee schedule. The tuition and fees we have as a 4.8% increase. This chart helps you put it in the context of an annual cost of attendance estimate. We're pleased, while tuition and fees, it's necessary for us to be able to cover our fixed cost increases, to have an increase allocated to cover these fixed cost increases. But the overall, with meals not going up, housing, room rates going up a modest amount, books has always been a maximum number that helps drive financial aid packages. But when you think of a student that is choosing to live on campus, now we have a lot of students that probably also choose some meal plans even as a commuter, but it's a modest increase overall of 3%. So I like to be able to put our tuition and fee increase in the context of the total estimated cost of attendance. Now, I told you it was going to be an abbreviated presentation. I can go back. Jess, I don't know. We got to go back to the budget. And I'm not trying to slight it. It's just that we did have an extensive presentation at the committee meeting, and I couldn't figure out what other than what's in the total budget
and the tuition and fee schedule that you might want to focus on today. But again, please feel free to ask me any questions. We have our budget director, Kim Reed, and her assistant budget director, Stacy Garrett. To the degree that I don't know the answer, I'm sure they'll be able to assist us.
Now's the time to get an answer rather than when we get ready to vote, because I don't know as many answers as Ann does. So. Any other comments or questions? If not, I will.
Yeah, I wanted to follow up on a couple of things that we talked about. Since we don't take minutes in the committee meetings, I do think there's some points that are extremely important to establish for the record and to give you an opportunity to provide fuller answers for some of the things that came up. At the committee meeting, there was a lot of discussion, myself, Regent Dennison, Regent Dodds, who were concerned about the increase in the distance, in the fee for the distance learning course, and the additional 20%. Now, I've heard from a lot of constituents in the wake of that, which obviously means this discussion is circulating on campus because no minutes from that meeting were published, and the questions that I raised were not published anywhere in the press. So it's obviously things that people are talking about organically. And I'd put the comments into two categories. One, there are those, and Regent Dennison expressed this at the committee meetings, that worry that we're hitting our price point or above, and that we're reaching the point where we're going to see diminishing returns from raising tuition or raising fees, and we'll start to see enrollment tail off. And that's been raised by many in my faculty constituency. So that's one concern, the impact it will have on the students and on making sure that we get the number of students that we need to make budget. The other concern is the one that I expressed at the time, which is that DLO was established, and it's turned out to be an absolutely brilliant idea to provide, if you will, an entrepreneurial way for academic affairs to create new revenue streams. And it's been a lifeline for the colleges. I mean, there are things we could never have done. We would be in much, much more trouble than we are now if we didn't have our DLO distributions. And I thank everybody involved in making this what it is. But it's money that the faculty create these opportunities. They teach these courses. It is our labor. The students create the revenue stream by paying. And there is great concern that every dollar needs to go back into the academic budget. If not distributed to the colleges, then it needs to go back into the academic budget, the same way that nobody asked parking and transportation to give money back to general, to just take an example of something that, you know, auxiliaries budgets, money goes back into auxiliaries. If they make it, you sell 1,000 t-shirts, it goes back into the budget. You don't grab it and pay the light bill with it. So that's a general concern that people have, and I'd like for you to elaborate on that a little bit more. And I know you have some data about the price points at other institutions about distance learning.
A 6% budget cut is obviously a challenge for this campus. Dr. Ramsey and I were in Frankfurt yesterday, and we heard discussions about what's the appropriate balance between weeping in public about the fiscal impact of another state budget reduction versus sucking it up, doing the best we can, keeping our eye on the goal, mm-hmm. and say we'll get through it. And we have identified a means to implement this reduction with the least amount of pain, we believe. It's not painless.
Mm-hmm.
That's why my initial comment is that because we have found a financial strategy to handle the budget reduction, there can still be the perception that perhaps there's still fat in the higher education budget, and there's not. So, yes, you're absolutely right. There is a fiscal implication for whatever strategy we implemented. But the strategy we implemented was intended to first and foremost protect positions. So the strategy was twofold. One, it included redirecting funds that have been earned by DLO, per se, and have been allocated as supplemental allocations to the colleges. So the first component was reallocating a portion of those funds in support of minimizing the impact of the budget reduction. From an academic standpoint, had we not done that, we would have applied a larger cut to the academic division, and it would have resulted in some significant issues internally about how to manage that cut. I believe it would have hit positions. For the smaller divisions, personally, I am very appreciative of the cooperation with DLO and academics to support such a redirection of those funds, because for the small divisions, some of us do not have any vacant positions. And if I had had a larger reduction, it would have resulted in a termination of a filled position. There's no doubt in my mind. So, in recognition that the Division of Extended Learning and Outreach has grown and has been very successful, we do not believe that the redirection of approximately $1.7 million will adversely impact future growth in that division. The other side of the discussion was the fact that WKU has been allowing full-time students to take these courses as part of their full-time load without any course fee or any additional cost. There are one reason we have an online distance learning rate, which is published for part-time students, is an acknowledgement that there are some distinct cost differences for online delivery and your main campus course. The distinct cost differences are not only that which happens as you deliver the course, but as we invest in additional course offerings and we continue to identify online programs that can be offered solely online. So part of your DLO distribution allows for an investment in the future. And that's very important. As you've seen in the enrollment numbers, online courses are extremely popular. So since we have traditionally, since the inception of an DLO as a division and a growth in online course offerings, we have allowed the students the flexibility to choose between the online course or the main campus course to give them the maximum flexibility, take advantage of both delivery modes. However, we've gotten to the point where we think we can implement a course fee, a modest course fee, in recognition of course requirements, delivery requirements, and investment requirements of DLO without adversely impacting the student or future growth of online learning. For example, while I'm not saying that any, Corey, that any fee is welcomed, I take a little comfort in the fact that our fee, which will be $71 a credit hour for that online course, is significantly less than the other Kentucky institutions. With the exception of the University of Kentucky, which I believe has continued to maintain an online fee of $10 for that course per credit hour, we have, just looking at last fall's data, if you were taking a full-time student taking an online course at the University of Louisville, you would have paid $460 a credit hour compared to the $71 we're proposing for next year. To get to a comprehensive university, EKU charged $3.77 a credit hour. Moorhead $3.55 a credit hour. Murray State $345 a credit hour. So it's not with great pleasure that we increase the cost of attendance for students, but we trust that this is a modest fee at 71 a credit hour and will be part of a big picture that allows us to implement this budget reduction with the least amount of pain, and but not adversely affect the colleges and affect the growth that can still happen with online learning.
And I guess that's just my caution going forward, is that this has been, you know, kudos to everybody who's made this an extremely productive golden goose. It's a great goose. And we don't need to kill the goose that lays our golden eggs, because the colleges are squeezed as tight as they can go, and we can't do anything that's going to impact that distribution. In fact, I would argue that the colleges need a much greater distribution, which is an internal matter, not a budget committee matter. But nonetheless, I think we have to be really careful, and we collect data on everything else. We need to watch this and make sure that we've got our price point right and that we don't suddenly start shooting our toes off one by one.
Absolutely, and believe
Ann's
that we'll
giving
monitor.
A very thoughtful response, but
oh, yes.
let me get a bit more direct in response to your question. In my opinion, this was not money taken away from academic affairs, because what we did was impose the same online fees for full-time students that we've been proposing, or that we've been implementing for part-time students since DLO's inception. And we just came to the conclusion that we can no longer afford to give online classes away to full-time students. So the money, the $1.7 million that Ann has described, is not money taken from academic affairs. Rather, it's new revenue generated from applying the online fee to full-time students that is being used to balance the budget that saves academic affairs about $1 million in cuts. $1.7 million is the revenue being generated from this move. Academic Affairs portion of that would have been about 60%. So whatever 60% of $1.7 million is, but something close to $1 million would have meant layoffs of faculty.
So I think,
And the other $700,000 would have meant layoffs in staff. We were able to put a budget together that had no layoffs, no furloughs. And if you've been reading the papers lately, you understand that other campuses are taking a much more harsh approach to their budget reduction. And to further respond to your thoughts, and Gordon does have some specific data, but Melissa's concern had more to do with how many full-time students would actually be impacted by this action, and Gordon has that data. The other thought that was expressed, and you expressed this one, was that DLO is already giving about $4 million to the university budget, which is not accurate, because all that money is summer school money.
Yes, and that was presented to the department heads, and that's where that number came from.
And
from
summer
Dr.
school is not, DLO was being asked, was from its inception, asked to manage summer school. But tuition from summer school is tuition, excuse me, revenue from summer school is tuition revenue that has always gone in to balance the university budget. So that's not DLO giving $4 million to the university. It's just the contracted manager for summer school. So in my opinion, there's not any money that's going from academic affairs to balance this budget. It's how we're choosing to be fair to full-time and part-time students and to be consistent with the other universities in the state, how online fees are assessed. So that was our rationale for that, and that is what enabled us to put a budget together that kept our employee workforce intact and did not result in loss of jobs.
But I hope you would agree that is a slippery slope. When you take money that, when you raise that fee, that would have been DLO money, it would have been money that goes into academic affairs, and it is a slippery slope. Up to now, we've been able to keep that money in academic affairs, just like auxiliaries keeps their money. I mean, we don't use money that PTS gets to keep lights on. We use it for PTS stuff, and we repay parking lots. And that's the issue. If you're starting to move money out of the academic budget to balance other places, and I certainly understand the necessity of that, but overall it creates a slippery slope that can absolutely harm your academic mission. And this is, I'm throwing a caution flag on this. You can't have a university where you're taking, you know, where you treat your academic affairs unit as your huge revenue producer. Well, it's a university. It should be the big revenue producer. We're an academic machine. We're not, you know, we're not an everything else machine, and we teach a little on the side. So that's my point, that it's an entering wedge. It's a wall that I really am disturbed to see breached, and I throw the caution flag on this today, and I think going forward, you're not just at muscle. I mean, you're at the point where we're going to have to start putting tourniquets on certain, you know, certain parts of the academic budget if we start cutting. We have to make decisions about what's important on this campus, and that's what's important.
I know, but all tuition could be considered academic revenue, but that's the lifeblood of the
That's
university.
Been argued.
$70 million in tuition revenue.
Yep.
The good news is the difference between $170 million and $388 million, only $72 million of that comes from the state. The rest of it we generate from all these other things that does, in effect, keep our workforce intact and allow us to continue to hire faculty and staff to do important work. So we think it's a good balanced budget with prudent action that saves a lot of jobs. Important, you do have some data on Melissa's question about how many full-time students are affected by this fee. I believe that was the nature of her question.
I do. In terms of course numbers, less than 2% of our courses are offered as online delivery in non-online only programs. Out of those, it's tough to dig down deeper than that, but only a fraction of those would be required course versus, for example, there was one course in Potter College that would fit this moniker of being a required course that offered only in an online section.
And I think her concern was actually not so much about things that would be in Potter, but other places.
Yeah, but that is, it's a 1% effect.
She was concerned about how many students would be required to take a course that would only be offered online and
right.
therefore
right.
required to pay this fee. And,
right.
and it's a. It's
right.
a
and
it's
let me pass on the $4 million also, Penny. 3.7, Beth, correct me if I. 3.7 of that is, as President Ransom pointed out, summer tuition revenue of the property of the university. 400,000 of that was an additional shift last year to create the very staffing plan.
Mm-hmm.
We're putting this into academic mm-hmm. affairs budget
mm-hmm.
rather than deal with generating academic affairs recurring one-time money. Very important, as
sure.
you're aware.
Absolutely.
Budget. And we were able to protect these 77 lines this year as budgeted lines by doing this. I don't think I would characterize it as taking money from academic affairs. The extra 10% that was being given to DLO is now being directed to Central as part one. So the DLO continues to collect its 20% distance learning fee, but the remainder goes now to Central as it does for any other course.
Mm.
The revenue from these online courses taken by full-time students doing a mix mm. will replenish that one-time recurring fund. And I said this, you may not say it again, the deal of distribution to colleges at this point in the process, I intend to keep those at least at the same level as they were in previous years.
What
this
is?
Will not affect the deal of distribution.
Thanks.
Let me clarify one additional point. For this will impact a small number of students in the fall and spring semester only. Any student that chooses to take an online course in winter term or summer has already been paying the online tuition rate.
There have been four classes of students paying it: part-timers, students in online-only programs, summer winter term. This is the fifth class that we have been waiving the fee for, and we frankly can no longer afford to protect.
And we'll watch this going forward just to make sure that we're not squeezing it. I'm sure.
Dr. Meredith and I will both be paying attention to enrollment trends. There are a lot of complexities in a decision of whether to attend or not.
Yes.
And as an institution, we do not want Christ to be a deterrent for attendance. So
the trends in higher education in Kentucky and elsewhere, in my opinion, our pricing is not nearly as big a problem as the fact that there's a price, period. What Brian Meredith will tell you is that more and more students, since this recession began in 2008, simply are unable to attend a college university because there is a cost, period. If the cost were $500 rather than $5,000, they couldn't do it because their families simply cannot. Do they choose not to pursue financial aid options, but for whatever reason, it's more a result of a recessionary environment in which we live, and that trend is across American universities A to Z. So it's not so much the price of a given institution, because there are a lot of options out there for institutions at various price points. But the biggest factor that we're dealing with is any cost at all, I just can't do it. And that's unfortunate, but I think that's an economic reality in this economic environment. Right? Is that what you're finding in
admission? That is accurate, and the fact that I always say the third party in all this, the federal financial aid, is just not where it used to be, and doesn't look like it's going to get back to where it was. And that's not just here, it's across Kentucky, across the United States.
Our numbers are being affected by the reduction in Pell Grant support at the federal level, and that's just something we've got to deal with.
At the CPE meeting yesterday, obviously you think the independent colleges and universities would feel that perhaps that they're a little lucky to not share in a state budget reduction, but that's not true. The head of the independent colleges and universities brought to everyone's attention yesterday about the state financial aid programs that are need-based running out of money in February, and that it's not just the federal government, it's called a CAP grant, KTG grants, but the Commonwealth of Kentucky had put while Keys, which is extremely important to Kentuckians, whatever the bill is, the state pays it, but we have need-based state financial aid that has been so underfunded that a student that made a decision to come to a university after about February, those revenue streams aren't available. So there's a lot of discussion at the state level about affordability and financing of financial aid that I trust is the economy improves, so will the state's budget directly and indirectly for us.
Any other questions or comments?
I'd like to make a few comments, Mr. Chairman, if that's fine.
One.
First, I'd just like to commend Ms. Mead and her staff and all those others involved in the budgetary process, because I'm sure it's just a ton of amount of work, and I wouldn't know where to start personally. But I firmly believe that WKU is the best undergraduate institution in the Commonwealth. There's no doubt about it, because we have some of the best faculty, some of the best students, and some of the most service-minded staff that I've ever met. But the rising tuition all across the state, but especially here at WKU, is a concern, because we are consistently behind the other benchmark universities that we have chosen in regards to faculty salaries. And my personal philosophy is that universities are here to provide us with an education, to provide us with other opportunities that we would not otherwise experience. And one thing that WKU is known for, and that was a factor in my decision to attend, is the personal relationships that we can build with our faculty, the one-on-one time, and the lack of such things as graduate instructors or being simply a number. At WKU, you are a person. But at what point with these rising tuition costs and not enough attention to faculty salaries and other academic matters, when does it happen that we no longer provide that same experience, that same level of academic quality that we have in the past? I don't think it's happened yet personally, but at some point it will happen. But I think as we go forward into the future, more attention does need to be paid to that, because at some point we will lose our competitive edge at recruiting and retaining distinguished faculty members, and we will lose that that part of the Hilltopper experience. At graduation this spring, we saw a number of single mothers who were recognized for their for graduation, and that's a profound achievement. But that also begs the question, how many others began at WKU but had to drop out or go to another university because of higher education costs here on the Hill? At what point will students begin considering cost as a deterrent to attending WKU? I don't know when that will happen, but eventually we will reach a point where enrollment will decline because of our tuition costs. And we are the third most expensive university in the Commonwealth, I believe, as far as public universities. And we're preceded only by University of Kentucky and University of Louisville. And if you ask me, that's not a good club to be in. I think that I speak for all students here on the Hill and across the state. Whenever I say that higher tuition should result in higher academic quality, more opportunities, and should not result in becoming a number or having to have graduate instructors in the classroom taking the place of our professors. I appreciate the work that Ms. Mead and her staff has done, but in all good faith, I cannot vote in favor of this budget because I feel like it is not taking into consideration those factors that alumni fondly remember of the university.
Okay. Any other questions or comments? I'll call for the question. All in favor of the budget proposal and tuition and fee schedule? Aye.
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 Any opposed?
No.
Okay. Director will reflect that. And that's our report in action.
Next item on the agenda is the nominating committee chaired by Mr. Meyer. Meyer.
Nominating committee met and recommends a slate of officers for 2012. Mr. Freddie Higdon is chair. Mr. David Porter is vice chair, and Dr. Melissa Dennison is secretary. That's our recommendation. I bring that recommendation to you all. Do I have a motion?
I move that we accept the nominations.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Congratulations, gentlemen, and Dr. Dennison. Condolences. also, our longstanding treasurer, Ann Mead. Please give an aye vote for
that need to be respected.
So moved.
Second. Okay, all those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Sorry, Ann, you're just a fixture.
And you need one more thing. So.
Next item, final item of the special meeting agenda is other business. Present to the Regents a calendar of activities coming up and ask President Ransdell to comment on any of those items he so chooses.
Yeah, one adjustment. Fourth item, the Governor's Trusteeship Conference, September 13 and 14th, that has been canceled this year. The CPE, in communication with the Presidents and the Governor, is not going to conduct that conference this year. We're going to assess the effectiveness of that conference in recent years and how that might be improved. Probably go to an every other year format with either a similar or not so similar context for that meeting, but that's under evaluation right now. So you can take September 13 and 14 off of that calendar. And the only other thing I'd point out to you is that each of your places is the Newsweek magazine for May 28 that highlights the Gatton Academy as the nation's number one high school. And I know that's something that has received a lot of attention, but that is the magazine that came out at that point. I thought you might like to have a copy of that. And then the Bowling Green Warren County Chamber of Commerce insert in a recent Lane report. I thought you might like to see how Bowling Green, Kentucky is marketing itself and how education, and particularly higher education and WKU, play an important role in the communicating and marketing of the business community in South Central Kentucky. So those are two things for your information.
Any region have any question or comments, other inquiry regarding our calendar dates for the collected on the agenda? If not, before we adjourn, we're going to take a 15-minute intermission between this special meeting and the commencement of the committee meeting. I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
Move adjournment.
Moved by Regent Kennedy.
Second.
Seconded by Regent Minter. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. We are adjourned.